And now it's time for the Wild Side News with your host, Sydney Wildsmith.
Sometimes it's difficult being human because we are so human. I remember a puzzle I had as a kid that was made of wooden pieces which fit together to make up the United States. Each state was a different color. At the time, the challenge was to just get them all to fit together correctly. When it was done, I'd think, wow, I did it. If I had to put one of those puzzles together today, each state would have a different feeling, as I know that each state is different. Today, we look at one state that just finished putting the pieces of its natural puzzle together, and they fit. That's coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues, here on the Wild Side News.
Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Okay, I need some feedback. As a report on nature's many facets each week, which I've been doing now for over 4 years, it seems as if springtime is becoming associated with ever more dramatic challenges. Floods have been washing their way into the homes, towns, and villages throughout the Midwest, and now down into Arkansas. Texas just seems to keep being hammered with dramatic weather. I'm not prepared to say that this is some manifestation of global warming, but it does seem as if something is changing. And if you've got opinions, contact me. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I'm no longer an accurate barometer of these changes in the weather, living as I do in San Diego, California, where the weather is wildly stable. My instinct tells me that we're headed for a record warm summer. If you're keeping notes, write that down and contact me at the end of the summer to see if I'm right. And just to summarize some of what seems to be trending all around us on our little planet Earth, I think we need to start getting ready for a change in the weather. Well, today I'm happy to bring you a great story of success. We hear every day of another animal species in trouble, whether it be from radical idealism gone mad, as it now is in Alaska, where thousands of wolves are being shot, trapped, snared, and decimated for what? It's hard to understand anymore. Or from the encroachment of highways, continuing suburbanization, and expanding populations. Maybe the turn in the economy and the housing market is a manifestation of natural economics, and nature is able to recover a bit from radical imbalances as a result of this economy. But we are learning. And as with almost everything, sometimes it takes a long time to feel the changes, but they come. In segment two of today's show, we're going to talk with Lynn Sadler, executive director of the Mountain Lion Foundation, about her role in helping complete a plan to link critical habitats together to create an interconnected wildlands network to assure animals and plants room to move, breathe, live, expand, and cohabit with human expansion. For such to be completed in such a large state as California is significant. It forms the basis for similar plans in states across the nation. A time could come when these wildlife corridors have reunited into a living framework across the country. See how things change? We are learning. And coming up, we hear a unique series of voices on the weekly Earth Summit, which begins right now. Welcome to the Weekly Earth Summit, the most important 15 minutes on Earth. I'm your host, Sydney Wildsmith. Today we begin with a message from Sierra Club's president, Carl Pope, about what we could do to stimulate this economy, and then hear from a variety of other voices who speak out loudly and clearly every day across the nation, but are rarely heard. So first, I want to introduce a true champion for the Earth, Carl Pope.
As the economy turns sour, it's time to make some lemonade. Wouldn't it be great if the next stimulus package passed by Congress included important incentives to get Americans back to work, building solar and wind power? We only need one more vote in the U.S. Senate to get that job done. Or look at 2 million homeowners facing mortgage crises. We're going to help them stay in those homes with new loans, but many of them won't be able to pay even fair mortgages because of soaring home heating and cooling bills. So while we're at it, why don't we help them get easy financing to retrofit their homes for energy efficiency, saving them money, reducing pollution, and helping stabilize global climate? We've got a problem with water shortages all over the country. What about a water conservation corps, modeled after Franklin Roosevelt's old CCC, helping kids who haven't found their way into the labor market, helping their communities store instead of wasting rainwater, retrofitting houses with water-saving toilets and shower heads? If we seriously want to solve global warming, this economic crisis is an opportunity. Who's going to be the leader who helps us connect the dots?
Thank you, Carl. My thoughts exactly. Since we aren't getting the leadership from the President and Congress that we need, as Carl makes so clear, here's an idea. What if we all took the money coming to us as the economic stimulus package and invested it into a clean energy or sustainable venture somewhere in this country? There would be a sudden surge of money to help kickstart a move towards energy independence. We'll be talking about this in the months ahead. I went to the movies and saw Horton Hears a Who. I loved that book as a child. And I can't say the movie improved on the original, but it was at least an entertaining look at the unseeable. The amazing truth is that there is probably more of life that we will never really see or hear that is active everywhere, if only we could either shrink down small enough to get to know it or blow it up big enough to appreciate it. A number of years back, I heard about a sound recordist living in Santa Fe, New Mexico, who was doing just that, developing ways to hear the unhearable. His name is David Dunn, and he recently released a new CD of his latest adventure called The Sound of Light in Trees, The Acoustic Ecology of Piñon Pines, which captures the literal sounds within trees, particularly those infested with piñon and graver beetles, which are ransacking the life of these trees in the desert southwest. But the soundscape, which took me into a new sense of our world, was his amazing recordings of life in small bodies of water, which could be only a few feet across, but which had thriving communities that were vibrant with sound. He refers to much of his work as acoustic ecology. So, as I bring you the world's greatest voices of the Earth on the weekly Earth Summit, I'd like now to introduce a community that is never really heard from, as recorded by David Dunn in Chaos and the Emergent Mind of the Pond. I want to thank the residents of the Who Pond who shared their voices with you and thank David Dunn for bringing their message to us all. You can learn more about David Dunn and his work by going to www.daviddunn.com. That's daviddunn.com. We need to listen to the wild. It speaks to us every day.
Thank you.
So as spring erupts into chorus around us, listen. And join us here each week as we feature the most important 15 minutes on Earth of the weekly Earth Summit. Things just took a turn for the better in California, where a statewide plan has been announced which will help maintain the natural highways used by the wild creatures. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Wildside News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
What's a hand-knit sweater worth until it's done? Until that final knot is tied, it can all unravel. That's what's been happening to much of the natural world. It's unraveling. In California this last week, they tied a knot on a plan to keep their natural systems from unraveling. In just a moment, we find out how, when your Voice of the Earth continues, here on the Wild Side News. We hear so many stories these days about what's happening to our animal populations around the world, and it can be depressing, and some of us can almost lose hope that we're going to be able to pull out of this. But with great insight and wisdom, there are things that can be done, and there's an amazing story that's coming out of California right now about a statewide research project that has created a great hope that perhaps some of these things can be turned around, that the populations that are otherwise being so impacted by human populations and other factors, including global warming, may have a chance in reality to maintain. To talk about that is Lynn Sadler, who's the executive director of Mountain Lion Foundation. Lynn, welcome to the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about the report, but why don't you give us some information on the Mountain Lion Foundation?
Mountain Lion Foundation is a 21-year-old national nonprofit that is dedicated to saving America's lions. We work on habitat, in this particular case, as a partner with South Coast Wildlands that developed the plan. And we also work on stopping the unnecessary killing of mountain lions by helping people peacefully coexist with America's lions.
In my lifetime, and I've spent time literally living for extended periods of time in wilderness areas, and yet in that time I've only actually seen the tail of one mountain lion. They are such a rare creature and so unique. What is your passion that brings you to serve them in such a dedicated fashion?
I've always felt that if we can learn to live peacefully with an animal that can eat us, then we can learn to live peacefully with all living beings. Early in my life, I spent a lot of time thinking about peace issues. And what does it mean to be peaceful I spent a lot of time looking at how we treat our bodies in terms of medicine, mm-hmm. and that we're very much oriented toward conquering something that's attacking us rather than in strengthening our bodies so that it can tolerate that pathogen or just let it go. And I've looked at how countries get along, and I've come to realize that in many ways, wildlife, we need to think of them as a different nation, and a nation that has every right to be here and has its own peculiar needs that we can accommodate. Theoretically, humans are the more intelligent of the species that we're dealing with, and that we should be able to figure out ways that we can all get along. That brings me to the subject of the linkages, which allows wildlife to move freely through a landscape, to do so in ways that cause the least negative interaction for the wildlife or the human.
I'm really glad that I asked the question, because in your answer, I can now understand very clearly why you've dedicated yourself to this Linkages Project, because it is in essence a holistic, restorative, and peace-giving way for us to cohabit with, as you say, these other nations of the wild creatures. That's a beautiful perspective, and I thank you for that. Let's talk a little bit then about what the Linkages, the mapping and of habitat corridors that has just recently been released as part of the South Coast Missing Linkages Project. Why don't you talk about what the mission there was?
There was a statewide effort to look at linkages that were critical to wildlife movement, and 232 of those were identified, 69 of which were in Southern California. And we decided the whole state was too big a bite to try to solve right away, so we chose the most difficult, Southern California, the most developed, most fragmented, and a global hotspot on the planet. We looked at the 69 linkages and realized that there were 15 or 16 that were so absolutely critical that if even one of them failed, the entire ecosystem would be compromised. And so we set about figuring out a way to protect those 15 or 16 linkages. And I say 15 or 16 because there's one linkage that's kind of two pieces, and so you'll hear it spoken both ways. We also were very, very clear we didn't want some academic report that sat on a shelf. We wanted to see this implemented on the ground, and so we looked at what would it take to see that this report would be implemented on the ground. And we realized that we needed to include as many people as possible from the very beginning. And so even in the identifying linkages part, anyone who wanted to come was invited. And then when we began to look at who were the focal species, we invited everyone that might have an interest. When we began to look at planning and implementation, we invited everyone who might have an interest. Because we invited everyone that might have an interest, when the day came that the reports were finished, there was a strong sense of ownership. Everyone had been involved. They owned this project. They were dedicated to this project. And a constituency was built in from that day forward. And so now when we begin to look at what it will take to purchase the land, regulate the land, to get an easement over the land, or just leave it exactly as it is, or perhaps do some restorative work, the people who care about it already know about it. They already understand the science behind it. They know it's defensible, and they're already ready to begin defending that land.
I have a list of all the various participants in this, and as you say, it is so broad spectrum. It's wonderful, and you've really created a massive unified effort in agreement about this particular strategy. As we talked, I'm a very visual person, and I think particularly in radio, we have to create visuals about what this linkage is. And this is what occurred to me as we were talking. Just as we now have a system of highways that interlinks us with virtually the entire nation, and we can hop on that freeway and we can drive and up to Washington State or out to Kansas or Texas or anywhere we want to go. And that allows us to get all the things that we need and to have a rich and useful life. That process has taken the animal world that used to be all connected that way and cut it up into 1,000,000,000 pieces. Now let's turn it on its head. Let's say that the animals ruled and they began to cut off our roadways and just began to just take them out because they were running things. Pretty soon we'd find ourselves extremely isolated. unable to get the things that we need to survive, and finally finding ourselves in some cases unable to really survive at all because we just couldn't go anywhere. That's the problem that we're talking about here. So what the Linkages project is doing is restoring those natural areas, those natural highways that otherwise have been broken up by many things. Why don't you give us a background on what some of those things are that are affecting these animal corridors?
To me, one of the most amazing things about this project is that these linkages exist now. The definition of a linkage is that animals are using it. And even in the midst of the most metropolitan area, arguably in the United States, wildlife are still roaming between large patches of land. And I find that utterly amazing. Sometimes they're getting across freeways. They're getting across waterways, and that to me is incredibly hopeful and instructive. So, yes, we have roads out there that need underpasses and overpasses so that animals can get across them. I know of one study of mountain lions in Southern California where the number one cause of death in the mountain lions being studied was roadkill.
Sure.
For a small animal that might only travel a few inches a day, imagine what a large subdivision can do to interrupt that animal's migration. And the other thing that people don't think about is that plants migrate as well. And as we're facing global warming, they're going to migrate up or down a mountain or up or down the state, depending on their particular needs and how climate change changes where they're currently residing. And so we also need room for plants to move. And a lot of people don't think about that.
That's true.
And I find that an exciting thought and a hopeful thought, that even in the face of global warming, which seems so overwhelmingly impossible to deal with, this project is dealing with it by giving these animals room to roam and to adapt to whatever is happening. And it might not be something as catastrophic as global warming, but it might be something geographically catastrophic like a fire. By giving animals room to roam, they can get away from fires or earthquakes or floods or mudslides or even subdivisions that encroach too closely on their being. There's other things a lot of people don't think about that I've recently been introduced to and find an amazing thing to think about, which is sound and light. I've been told that mountain lions go way, way out of their chosen path to avoid light, and I've read some very interesting studies about the effects of sound on frogs. Frogs rely on their sound as a defense mechanism, and external sounds like big rumbling trucks or trains or airplanes can disrupt that defense mechanism and may be what's accounting for the decline of many frogs in California.
Fascinating stuff, as well as the opportunity for bird species to call out and be heard.
Yes.
Such that they can find mates, and that would apply all across the board to many, many species.
Correct.
What I find so interesting about this particular study and so hope-filled is the fact that it really takes one of the largest biomes, California, and really starts to intelligently link it together. The backbone of much of this are the public lands already. Your national parks, your BLM lands, your state forests, your local parks and communities, and I suppose that you kind of start with those and then try to figure out how to create these massive systems that are interconnected.
Well, it makes sense that the areas that are currently protected would have most likely the most wildlife. They're the areas least disturbed at this time. So we have these big patches, imagine, the four big wilds, as it were, in Southern California. And in order for them to not be just big zoos of specific species, the animals need to be able to move between them. And so the wonderful thing is the animals at the moment are moving between them and maintaining some genetic diversity as a result. And so we mapped where those areas are, and we looked at what's called least-cost corridors or least-cost linkages, and that's the least cost to the animal to get from one place to another. I just love that the animals themselves showed us where that is for the most part.
One of the aspects of these corridors is that they do have to have certain criteria. They have to be big enough, because if they're too small, for example, they can be easily destroyed. There is no buffer zones. Give us some idea of what would make up a corridor or a linkage.
The way I think of a linkage is land with the fewest barrier to travel. So it's likely to have food and water along the way. It is not likely to have tall buildings, walls, freeways that interrupt the ability to walk across. It's not likely to have the noise and the sound that might be disruptive. In other words, it is the path with the least resistance to an animal.
And that's part of your least cost union. In other words, if we're going to focus on a linkage, let's use the one that is easiest for that animal to utilize. Let's talk a little bit about the animals that you've really focused on.
In Southern California, the mountain lion, of course, is the top predator. So it's going to be a keystone species in each of the linkages. But there are many, many other species that are both an indicator of what is going on and a participant in what is going on. So in some of the linkages, badger and mule deer are especially important. In other linkages, fish play a very, very important role. We tried to look at each level so that we made sure we looked at the entire food chain and all of the species and didn't leave any of the animals out.
Mm-hmm. So there was kind of a natural balance that would support a diversity of life.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in terms of these linkages, give us a sense. Is this like a 100-foot wide linkage or 200 feet or a quarter mile? Or I imagine it varies.
I mean, in some places it'll be miles, and in other places probably some fraction.
You've identified all of these various ways to link this. The next real challenge is to implement this literally on the ground.
Yes.
Because you're going to have other people who are going to say, oh boy, this is, boy, more government regulation, more people trying to interfere with my right to do what I want with my property. So you got a challenge ahead. This is going to have to be a long-term process. You do have an extraordinary coalition. Explain to people how this particular study can really help in moving us to a sustainable and nature-friendly future.
The way I think of it is this. These linkages already exist. If you have wildlife in your backyard now, you're likely to have wildlife in your backyard in the future. I'm going to assume that you chose your home because you wanted that wildlife in your backyard, that there was something about that property that appealed to you, and this is an opportunity to keep that property intact. A lot of people don't really think about the role of certain species. And while I don't know a lot about very many species, I can talk a little bit more about keystone predators because I deal with mountain lions. And I often give them the example of Yellowstone. Many people know that wolves were extirpated from Yellowstone. What they don't know is that mountain lions were also extirpated. And we've spent millions of dollars to bring the wolves back, and the mountain lions are coming back on their own. And what most people don't realize is what changes came about as a result of those predators coming back in. And the most visible result is actually the restoration of the meadows and the aspen grove. That is because herbivores have not evolved not to eat themselves out of house and home. They find something wonderful to eat. They stop. They eat it all up, down to the nubbins, trample it under, and poop on it. And resources don't get moved through the ecosystem. When the appropriate predators are there, they keep the animals moving so that the plants have a chance to regenerate, and all those seeds that have to go through somebody's alimentary canal to generate get moved along through the ecosystem. And so the landscape that we know and love in Southern California depends on all of the species doing their particular role to maintain itself. I don't think there are extraneous species. I think that we need them all, and that when we remove one, we're going to have a chain of events that happens that is going to change the landscape in ways that we might not find at all attractive. The grasses might change because the birds change, because the animals that eat bird eggs change, because mountain lions were gone and there was no competition for those mesopredators that ate the bird eggs, but then those bird eggs, the birds never got born, so then the seeds that the birds help distribute never get distributed. And so I realize that many people may have a number of fears about their property, but my expectation is that they chose the property because they love it, and that what we're trying to do with these linkages is maintain what we have.
That's a really, really nice way of putting that. You've expressed that very well, the fact that there are ways in which our natural communities are maintained and created and held healthy that we may not even imagine because it's so complex. It's just so complex, and the interrelationship of all of these creatures is something we probably really can't chart out, and therefore perhaps the best way to go about this is just the best we can, keep them as natural and diversified as possible. I think one of the most, again, hopeful and useful aspects of this particular project, and I'll have links to this, the reports and various agencies that are involved on the homepage, is the fact that people can use this then in planning into the future. This study now exists as a baseline where people can look at this and say, well, gosh, maybe we shouldn't put this golf course there because actually that may have an impact and we maybe have some alternatives or whatever that may be.
Or you might not want to put the golf course there because it is a mountain lion corridor and you may not really be as excited about seeing a mountain lion up close as you are just knowing they exist out there taking care of the landscape.
Yes, exactly. So it becomes a useful tool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what we need. Otherwise, it's just sort of a scattergun approach to development without this consideration, and nature is taking a big hit right now. And I'm really thrilled that these kinds of studies are emerging that are making it so possible for us to use real science and as real wisdom to make a difference into the future here. Well, Lynn Sadler, Executive Director of Mountain Lion Foundation, there's a lot more to this study. Please give us some links that might help people find out more about this.
SDWildlands.org has the report as well as maps that you can take virtual tours, which I think is very exciting, and you can get a lot more detail about the various linkages at that site. Of course, I always invite you to our site at mountainlion.org, where we also link to this report. You can learn more about the role of some of the top species at that site.
I'm so happy that this is now literally in the books, on the books, on the ground. It's an extremely important development. And I was going to just mention very quickly, listen to this list of people who've been participating in this before we sign off here. U.S. Forest Service, California Resources Agency, California State Parks, the Mountain Lion Foundation, hello, the Wildlands Conservancy, San Diego State. It just goes on and on and on. So this is a very powerful union of efforts of scientists, researchers, and interested citizens to strengthen the continuity of our natural system. Lynn Sadler, I want to thank you for lending your voice here on the Wild Side News.
Thank you.
Wishing you all a warm goodbye, this is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios. Until we meet again next Tuesday or any time in the archives, when your voice of the earth rings out around the world, here on the Wild Side News.